Hey guys, welcome to the Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast. Just want to talk to you a little bit before we jump into this next episode. You heard me say it a million times. Please give us a review on iTunes. Helps me keep this free. Also, go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. Make an amazing product. Even if you're not a rifle hunter, pick up one of their glassing pads. You will thank me for it later. And I'm happy to announce our partnership with Primos and Bushnell. I've been using the Primos Hyperdome single reed. It's a great cow call. And I used a Hyperdome mini to make calf sounds. And if you listen to my podcast with Joel Turner, you'll know how important it is to have that in your bag of tricks to be able to make calf sounds. Bushnell makes awesome trail cameras. And if you go back and you look at my blog back in 2013 and in 2015, I did independent tests on trail cameras and Bushnell came up out on top both times. This season, behind the scenes, I did another trail camera test on a few different brands and Bushnell rose to the top again in bang for the buck, quality, and overall usability. So we decided to partner up with them. And the great thing about that is I'm going to pass along a discount to you guys. You can save 15% if you go to their website and use promo code STL02. That's STL02. Save 15% on anything. Doesn't have to be the things that I use. We use their ground blinds, a couple of their elk calls, and we use the trophy cam. It's an excellent product. Go check them out. I also want to talk to you a little bit about, I know it seems early in the season, but if you don't already know, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that I am an outfitter here in Arizona and I do run hunts in South Dakota. My busiest time of year is archery deer season here in Arizona. We take out just a handful of, I'm busy because I only take out a select few amount of clients. So if it's something you want to get in on, I have a couple slots left. And I'm telling you this now, early in the season, because people always scramble after they realize that they didn't get enough hunting in for the year or they didn't draw the tags that they want to get in on that hunt. Also, javelina season. The draw is going to be coming up in the next couple of months. I know it seems far away, but it's really not. October is not that far away. And if you want to get in on an excellent hunt, or if you've never been out west or to Arizona and you want to try something new during a time that there's nothing going on, what are you going to do in February? Twiddle your thumbs? Come out. We have amazing hunts. You could do it with a bow. You could do it with a rifle. You could do it with the muzzleloader. Just all around inexpensive, good time, good way to spend the last few months of winter and come out and experience nice weather on a super fun hunt. Get in contact with me. We fill up quick. I take anywhere between 12 to 16 hunters a year on that hunt and the camps fill up really quick. So give us a call. Check out daysinthewild.com. Send me a message. Any way you want to get in contact with me, social media, we'd like to put together a hunt for you. So without further ado, let's jump into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we are talking elk, and we are going to talk to Renee Ramos. I got the chance to meet Renee in Oregon last year. I was hunting with Corey and Shannon, and we ran into him. Lunchtime, I think it was, or something like that. We were taking a quick break to grab some food, and we ran into him at the parking lot. And Renee's a badass. He hunts. I mean, from what little I know from our conversation, you definitely do things a little different than most of the guys I know. Because you were talking about some things, and you really spoke. You piqued my interest because it's not what I had heard. I hadn't heard it actually in a while. There was a guy by the name of Mike Vaughn, Olympic Mountain Outfitters out in Washington. He's like, he kind of said some of the stuff. He used to talk to me doing things the way you sort of were describing how you were hunting them that day. Anyway, without further ado, Renee, tell us a little bit about yourself. There's a little quick rundown about how you got into hunting and, you know, what your passions are and how you fit into the puzzle here.
I pretty much, you know, grew up hunting. You know, my family, my dad, he and my uncle and all his brothers, you know, we had a pretty big family and a lot of friends at, you know, pretty big hunting camp, you know, and that's what I kind of grew up into. And my dad and my uncle pretty much started this out, and you know, they're big time bow hunters, you know, back in the 60s, 70s and, you know, mid 70s, I was born. And of course, my dad drug me around. You know, he used to, gosh, from the time I could walk, he was taking me fishing and, you know, and hunting too. You know, that's what I remember. I got pics of, you know, back in 1976, 77, 78, you know, where he's got me on dead animals, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, you know, that's what started it, you know, and you know, 5 years old, dad put a pellet gun in my hand. And, you know, we're out camping every year, you know, either out archery hunting or out here or over in Eastern Oregon. We did a lot of mule deer hunting on the east side. So that's kind of benefit of Oregon, you know. You got the west side here, you got the Roosevelts and Blacktail, and
right.
And you got the Cascades, you know, you got the Cascade Roosevelt, and you got the bench legs, you know, the cross between muleys and blacktails, which is a whole other animal, really nice ones. They get big. I haven't really focused on any of that yet, you know, I'm kind of just stuck on the coast. Yeah. And then we got on the east side, you got the Rocky Mountains, and, you know, you got the, you know, the mule deer over on that side. And you got whitetail too now, you know, those kind of made a pretty big, you know,
right,
showing my lifetime.
It's actually one of the few whitetail that I need to get still. I'm trying to get my Super Slam, and I need my Northern Pacific whitetail, which would fall in Oregon and I think up even in Idaho. And then there's one more in Florida, the Seminole whitetail, that I need to shoot, and I have all eight. So I'm definitely going to come out there and try to get a whitetail, because I heard those populations are getting pretty big. So
get over here and get a Roosevelt as well, huh?
Shit, dude, Roosevelt, like, I don't know what it is, but Pacific Northwest has my number, man. I can't kill a blacktail, and I can't kill a freaking Roosevelt to save my life. Well, I mean, and I don't know how much you've listened to my podcast before in the past, so – the very first time I went Roosevelt elk hunting was in the on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington, and was with this. I wasn't hunting with Mike Vaughn; he wasn't guiding me, but he set me up a drop camp, and so I was hunting out of his camp. And you know, he was giving me tips and whatever. But the very first night, I had a raghorn bull. It, to me, was a raghorn bull. You know. You know, coming from Arizona at the time, even then, you know, if it wasn't like a 320 bull, you don't even look at it. Like, and I didn't really like, I didn't do my research on Roosevelt anyway. So, but it was a 4x4 or maybe, yeah, a 4x3 maybe. So he was a little, you know, I had him at 30 yards. I drew back on him. I shot him in my head and I let down and I let him go. And I got back to camp that night and they had a trailer set up, and they had a TV in this trailer, and everybody was kind of like there, like, you know, the guys that he was guiding and a couple of the people that he had set up camp for, they were kind of, everybody was like, and I put it up on the screen on the, you know, from what we videoed, and everybody's like basically berating me, like, how did you let that go? You don't understand, you know, you don't pass stuff up like that. And I'm like, it was the first night, you know, like, I had no freaking clue. I mean, I'm like, I've shot mule deer bigger than that thing, you know? He's like, but yeah. So I guess I could have killed one, but I did not. I had another opportunity on that same hunt, like on day day seven, and I had a decent 5x5. It gave me a good look, but it was like 60 yards, and I mean, it was wide open. He was in a freaking clear cut, and I snuck up, and he was bugling and chasing this one cow around, and he finally came, and he stopped broadside at 60 yards, and I didn't feel good about the shot because I had heard so much about Roosevelt's being, you know, they're bigger and this and that. And like, you know, I'm like, I don't know, man, I've killed other elk at that distance before, you know, I've killed Rockies at that distance, but for some reason I kind of talked myself out of it. And I kind of hoped that he can maybe come in a little bit closer or whatever. I wasn't doing any calling or nothing. He had no clue I was there. You know, he was just chasing this cow around. Then eventually they kind of worked off and I never got another opportunity. But, and then I shot one with Corey 3 years ago that we couldn't find.
That happens.
Yeah, that sucked. That sucked. I hit him low. I hit him pretty low. And I think it was just a brisket shot. He bled like a son of a bitch, man. We tracked him for probably a mile and just dried up. And
probably that's how I lost my bull this year. It was a brisket shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I ended up finding him. I mean, still alive. I got another arrow in. Second arrow wasn't the best placed arrow where you'd make him bleed, but it killed him.
Yeah.
But you've seen how thick that shit is now.
But yeah.
Some of those brand new, you know, 10-year-old reprod patches can just be really thick and
they're rough.
We found them, but we found them, you know, late in the day. It was the first day that I think we had a 92 degree day, and you know, we did grids on this mountain and with our, you know, using GPS, trying not to, you know, miss a spot, and got us by the end of the day. You know, I shot him again the second I shot him on the opening day.
Mm-hmm.
He almost died right by my camp. And he bled, like you said, he bled like a stuck pig, and it just stopped. And we grid searched that mountain, and we couldn't find him. And so, like I said, that was on a Saturday. And fast forward 2 days later, 3 days later, you know, run into him again. You know, he stayed on this mountain. The only reason was is because of a herd of cows on this, you know, outside
right.
Camp. I kind of put myself, you know, in a traveling pattern, you know, here on the coast anyways. It's all public land, so there can be camps everywhere.
Right.
But, you know, I pattern these elk out. So, you know, it's a lot of guys don't do. So they kind of just hunt one area and wait for those elk to, you know, come through there. And so I kind of put myself in places where I know bulls go through, you know, early season. You know, they're like dogs, you know, that first smell hits the air. They're, you know, in August, I believe in August when they strip their velvet.
Yep.
It's because you got that first cycle that comes in, you know, and once that smells up in the air, you know, I kind of put myself, you know, where I know there's a lot of cows, you know, we call it a nursery.
Yep.
And a lot of young bulls actually in this nursery, man, there's a herd of 22 shooter bulls in this herd. I know they're all young. I mean, they're all the unit I hunt, you know, it's a 3-pointer better. So they're all legal bulls, but they're all young bulls, you know, they're all 2-3 year old bulls. So, you know, I got Sarah with me now. So
right.
We try to get on them. But before we found this out, you know, we're tracking my elk and, you know, I put myself right in the kind of where they come through, and because, you know, every night we had bulls come through my camp, you know, literally they come through, wake you up and on they go. So that's why this bull stayed on, you know, this wounded bull, he stayed on this hill because all these cows were there and there were some ripe cows in there. You know, and he was wounded, but you know, they got that natural instinct to, you know, to go until they're dead. And
right.
You know, that's why I hunted that mountain. You know, we ended up we covered, you know, a big area, and it all came down to where he stayed right there. And by accident, you know, I actually, you know, just blew a bugle. You know, we were actually 200 yards from my car. We made this big old circle because we heard some elk down in there. And of course, I'm trying to get Sarah down on him. And so I just blew a little chuckle. And I had this bull above me on the road we were just on, you know, kind of made this messed up bugle. And I was like, oh, no way. That's got to be somebody, you know. We were just up there.
Right.
So I was just like, well, maybe these elk, they just kind of went around us and went up top. And so we went right back up to the road and started looking down. Sarah, she, you know, she looks down. She's like, look at all this blood right here.
Oh, shit.
I was like, well, it's all fresh. You know, it wasn't there, you know, a little bit ago. But like that was, you know, that was a bull still bugling. So at that point, I knew he was still alive and ended up, you know, shooting him the next morning. I actually just caught him out in the open big timber. He was crossing from one reprod patch to the next. And that's when, yeah, I couldn't get any closer than 80. I said about 85 yards. I didn't even get a range of him. I just,
right.
Just to get another arrow in him. And I did, and he ended up going right back into the reprod, and that's where, you know, the whole look grid searching for him and found him, ended up finding him that night. You know, he died right in the opening, like a little meadow in on the south slope, so he had sun all day long.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, and I tried to salvage, you know, just what I could, but it was a loss. So
damn.
You know, it happens. You know what I mean? I've seen this for over 30 years, and you know, it wasn't me losing the elk. You know, I've seen a lot of other guys, you know, over the years lose elk, and you know, not only with archery rifle as well.
Oh yeah, oh yeah,
yeah. And I've had friends, you know, they always call me to come help track, you know, because you're a good tracker.
Yeah,
I track elk. And, GPS right now, you know, I'm just getting this whole GPS thing. I never used to use electronics, and you know, of course, the internet came out and Google Earth came out, and that's how I you know, I got to study drainages and I got to walk these drainages. And
right.
And then the GPS, you know, I ended up just getting last couple years, you know, I got a GPS and I'm like, oh my gosh, this makes it way, way much easier.
Yeah, that's a game changer for sure.
It's almost too easy, but, you know, I like it. You know, all property boundaries and, you know, it's a useful tool.
Oh yeah, for sure. Without a doubt. So, I mean, some of the stuff you were just saying were some of the things we were talking about when I had met you. And that's what had piqued my interest, because you like track them down, you pattern them out, and everybody that I've talk to normally doesn't really do that. They, you know, they got their areas that they go to, and but they also rely heavily on the calling, you know. And I right off the bat, I noticed that you don't rely heavily on the calling, that you kind of sneak around a lot more than and track a lot more and get on travel corridors and all that stuff. But we'll get into that. I got a couple of questions that well, first of all, let's talk about how you start planning your elk hunting season. You know, when we ran into you, you were talking about going to Montana and this and that. So how do you plan your season out, and like, what are some of your tag strategies?
Well, for Oregon, this is pretty simple, because it's what I do is just over the counter. And,
right.
And it's just, it's hard for me to even want to go to Eastern Oregon to look for Rocky Mountain elk. I'm just, like, I'm stuck on this coast, you know, it's like my backyard, you know, and that's what I know.
Right.
I know Eastern Oregon as well. I did a lot of mule deer hunting growing up. I've snuck up, you know, back when I was mule deer hunting, elk were full rut. So, of course, I'm sneaking up on elk and just to see how close I can get to them. That, you know, that's kind of my game, you know, just for
right.
Fun. But, gosh, kind of brain fart. Sorry.
That's all right, man. I do it all the time. It's the old age setting in.
Yeah, I know. I'm about to turn 45 here, so.
Oh, yeah, we're about the same age. I'm 44.
But, so. You know, we, it's just, when I, in the coast, you know, my strategy is just, it's the same. I spend a lot of time out here, like probably this afternoon. I got a bear tag, you know. My bear tags go out there and keep an eye on the elk.
Right.
You know, and I know the area that they hang out in, and it won't take me long to find them. And, but right now, you know, in big bowls, you know, they're kind of together and in little groups and just kind of seeing what's out there. And I know there's some giants, you know, after this year, I've, you know, a few new areas, well, not new. I mean, I've been hunted them before, but there's new, you know, a new bowl to that area that I need to, you know, focus on and check out, you know, that I've seen later in the season. So, That right now, like, you know, that's what I'm doing, you know, bear hunting. I'll probably do that for the rest of the week and go look for these elk.
Nice.
But And you know, and kind of back and forth, August, you know, I'll peek in out, peek in, you know, it's like 35 minutes from my doorstep. So I'll get up there in August and do a, you know, about a 15-mile hike just to see where the elk are at, you know.
Right.
And like I said, that's all part of my tracking deal, is that, you know, I the some of these bulls that I like to track, you know, I from just over the years, I get into these areas. Like I said, my before my prep, this is how I do it on the coast. So I'm in there, I'm looking for those early rubs, and I'm also checking out the nurseries too, making sure, you know, none of these big ones have already raked off. And you know, they'll come down, and they don't pull the whole herds off. These big bulls will come down and just grab a cow, whatever's ripe, and take them
Right.
with them, and they're
Just
gone.
cut the hot cow out of the herd.
Yep. And sometimes you'll catch him in there, you know, like the bull I shot last year. He, you know, he was a week before that, he was 6 miles away. He was
Oh, wow.
spotted. They took pictures of him, some other guys that I know, and you know, a week later, he's six miles in the nursery, and he's already had, you know, some cows singled out. So, but for, and if I'm going to hunt a different state, you know, I don't, like I said, I've always been stuck to the coast. So,
Right.
I went to Montana for the first time, did my first out-of-state hunt,
Okay.
and during that hunt, I had a buddy that lives there, you know, that I grew up with here, and he kind of gave me a general area of where I can hunt. And so, of course, I pull up Google, and I start study the drainages, and from my past experience, you know, hunting Rocky Mountain elk, you know, in higher elevations, you know, I you know, like my first time I ever did a backcountry hunt, I found the elk at like anywhere from 6,500 feet to 7,000.
Right.
So that was kind of stuck in my head from years ago, and I kind of studied all the drainages and where I wanted to camp, and I mean, it was all public ground. I mean, it wasn't, you know, there's you can there's old skidder roads that, you know, locals use to get up, you know, pretty quick with their four wheelers and stuff.
Right.
But you know, they've had their way of hunting when we ran into them. So all this studying I did, you know, online, and I just kind of applied it. I went over there, and I spent a day of just glassing, and man, I seen so many elk. It was just like, I was like, wow, it was different. There were so many more elk than I see in Oregon, you know, over in what I do over here. They're
Right.
just everywhere. I mean, there's bulls screaming, and you know, they're full on rut. So that, you know, my just from my past experience, I guess I just took that same hunch, and then, you know, of course, a little bit of word of an area that you know, that a buddy kind of threw out at me, and I was on elk, and I killed an elk pretty much the second day I was there. So and the same thing, I wish I would have waited, you know. I killed just, you know, a little young rag, but you know, but
It
after
was
that, you know, I
your
seen some
first time.
monster. Yeah, so I was like, I wasn't, you know, not me. I was like, nope. And Sarah's like, you gotta, you know, she of course she's my ear right there. Oh my God, yes, nice, shoot, shoot, shoot. All right. Dead ball, you know, but it was all exciting for her, because you know, I want her to experience more of this. It was all a good experience for her as well. And you know, and after that, we waited for some other friends to get up there, and oh man, Aaron snuck up on some monster bulls, you know, and called in some big ones, you know, just for fun. And
Right.
we're almost like, oh gosh, you know, I'm calling my friend, you guys showing up, you guys are 2 days late.
Nice.
But they ended up showing up, and we ended up getting a bull before I had to leave, you know, and last tag field.
Nice. So, let's go back to the coast, and you talked about the nurseries and stuff. Now, these areas that you find are year in, year out, are basically stay the same, or you constantly having to find each season where the cows are hanging out.
No, they have, you know, those cows, like I said, once you get those lead cows patterned out, you know, and over the years, you know, they teach all their herd, you know, the same pattern of this area that I'm hunting, and it's a pretty big pattern. You know, if I think I when I Googled it out, it's something like 23, 24-mile circle.
Oh, wow. So they're just making a big loop.
Yeah, and you know, when this herd is together, it's a pretty good strong herd. It's a bit in a lot of elk, but there's also a lot of young bulls in there, and there's a lot of good bulls in there, and a lot of old bulls, and there's a mixture. I mean, for a 3-point or better unit, so you can't really shoot spikes, but which I like, I think compared to all the other units I hunt, that are any bull, have a good, healthy population of good bulls in it. So I kind of stick to this one unit, kind of across the road from where you guys are at. But so these the you know so these ripe cows, so what they do is when you got all these bulls coming in, they you got all these young bulls, late early in the season, all these cows are giving birth right now. So there's big groups of them. So as August comes around, or July, August, calves get older, then that first cycle I think hits, and all the bulls come down. What they do is the younger bulls will break up these big herds. But these areas, the cows don't really leave far if they're not getting pushed. But all these young bulls, they come down and they'll break up, this big herd of, let's say there's 80 head when they're together. Well, they'll break them down in little groups of six, seven, eight, and which is all right. So each and every one of these little groups of cows, well, they all have, that instinct of the lead cow over the years, and do the same kind of pattern around this area that I hunt. It's either they have their feed. So like in this big 20-mile circle, let's say they got this 20-mile circle. Okay, so they're feeding. At least they live in this area for few days, and let's say that another group of elk come in with another bull, could be a bigger bull, with a group of cows come making the same kind of pattern. Well, you'll get that other younger bull, or that bull will just get up and take off, and they'll continue their pattern on. And that's what I noticed. So what I kind of do is, like I said, when I put myself in places and where I camp, sometimes I'll have like three camps set up in a big area. Because I don't want to hike back to one camp, it's got one that's closer. I'm gonna camp out there. But pattern is like finding these cows are pretty easy. They're there. And once you start kind of trying in the area that I hunt, it's there's a lot of mixed timberland in there anymore. So they do a lot of clear cutting, spraying and all that. So it's kind of confining these elk to their feed areas now. But and so in a lot of these cuts, it's like I said, that's making it a lot easier for me to find them as well. So all these clear cutting
So you just
and
go classic haircuts or?
yeah, go walk. I do a lot of walking the roads and jumping down into those, into those bottoms and hitting game trails. And just looking for fresh sign, and that's how I guess I've come to pattern elk. I'll talk about a different unit. Like I grew up hunting a unit that's on the opposite side of where you guys were hunting. And as a kid growing up, just hunting, and like I said, as we talked about a little bit myself earlier, growing up as a kid hunting, September month, the guys were all out hunting. Well, when I was, my dad, of course, got me a recurve at the time, a 40-pound bow, and I was hunting everything, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. But as I got older, as I was, I got ventured out from camp a lot. So what my dad didn't know is I would end up miles from camp.
Oh, geez.
Young, early teen, and my dad, when I got my first tag in my pocket, was able to elk hunt, archery, I was out, I was gone. I went a long ways, and it was hard for me to get an elk back then, because I was still learning. But so my deal is, as a kid, I'd get on a herd, you'd hear them feeding, and I would just be stuck on them, and then I'd follow these elk. And I would never push them, and sometimes I'd go too far, and then I'd just backtrack out, so over the years, so I would say I started out doing this at 11, messing around, camp. Me and my friend Adam, we used to Yeah, we used to just we'd go miles from camp, 10, 11 years old, and with our little either we had 22s or pellet guns or slingshots or whatever we wanted to hunt with, and a lot most of the time it was just our bows. We'd end up miles, so and I was never we're ne I guess I was just never afraid to venture out and get lost. I mean, I'd go a direction and that's how I really initially learned the areas from. Just getting lost out there, and I'd end up and I'd look over the valley, and I'd be so far, then I'd look over and I'd like, oh man, that's the valley right there. I'd see the whole valley that I live in, and like, all right, well, I know where I'm at now, I better go that way. And then growing up as a kid, we did a lot of dirt bike riding too, so we whole coast range, hitting roads and just riding. So I learned a lot of the areas that as the years went on. But is it, as the years went on hunting these elk over there, I just as old, braver I got, as a teenager, I'd follow these elk. I'd go all day long from daylight to dark. And back then, I never had a bottle of water. I'd probably have a couple candy bars in my pocket, and I'd drink out of every spring that I came through, and just stay with these elk. And if I can get it close enough to get a shot, I would. And I missed a lot, being instinct hunter hunting the, it was tough, but my deal is that I love to see elk as a kid growing up. So, until I was four, like I said, 14, I ended up killing my first bull, which is right back there, nice 6 point. And in the same way, it was like I've already been into this a couple of years, and now I'm, I was miles from camp, and I knew where these elk were, and ended up killing my first 6 point. Snuck right, I snuck up on them. I seen this herd feeding to back. So I guess that's how I learned that I wasn't a caller, so I was just a stalker, and I'd spot and stalk, and I'd find these elk. And as I followed them, I learned. I find rake trees. I see what they ate. All the different varieties of food. And I always just try to stay downwind and never be seen and just hunker down. And that's how I ended up killing my first bull. And I would have killed anything. I was,
Oh, of
my
course.
deal was to get an elk there in front of me. A cow, bull didn't matter to me. But unfortunately, I seen a bull and I snuck up on him and I shot him. And on, it's following year, same thing. It was I killed a big old cow the following year. And then it went on from there, killed a couple young bulls, and then in my head I was like, well, I want bigger bull, I already killed a nice bull, but I wasn't in the calling. So my deal, my strategy was pattern these elk out, I'd follow them, or a new herd, new area. Wasn't afraid to get lost. That was the whole thing, being patient. I was really patient. I wanted to kill an elk. I wanted a good close shot. And because I don't have no sights, I'm just shooting fingers and and it was all bare bone. At that time, my dad bought me my first compound too. When I was 14, it was just a wasn't a like a Martin Links Magnum. And that was a, it was a different for me because I was used to a longbow, but got shooting that. It was pretty much the same. And then pull back, aim, shoot, kind of instinct, and I ended up killing that first bull. And then I started killing elk every year after that. It was easy. It was archery season came around. I got my driver's license. So when I got my driver's license, it was. I don't think I ever I disappeared during the summertime, or when I wasn't in school. I was on the river. I had my fishing rods in my car, and of course I've always carried something to hunt with. And if I wasn't fishing, I was hiking. I was looking for elk. So I spent a lot of my teen years, and so that made it easy for me. So September roll around. Oh man, they're not here. So I'd be looking for the freshest sign. So over the years of tracking these elk, I've learned to see how fresh that sign is. If it's 3 days old, those elk can be a few miles ahead. It's a few miles away. It's so And so I get on these tracks, and like so if I see something 3 days, yeah, all right, well, I'll kind of follow them down, and I'll hit a couple of drainages, and sometimes they peter out and disappear, and then I'll just do a big loop and do something different, and until I get on that some fresher sign, and get on that fresh sign, and like I said, I hit those game trails and just go. That's what I do. I just hit game trails. I sneak. I get in there. I walk every 30, 40 yards, and my ears are like, I count on my ears for everything. So, like my
Right.
hunt with Sarah, I make her, she's got to stand 20 yards behind me just because I got to just, I can't, I'll hear her breathing.
Right.
So, and try to pinpoint these noises and sounds, and then, we just kind of creep along. And especially when I'm on fresh sign. Once I hit the fresh sign, and or I find a bull that's living by himself, and maybe he's got a cow or two, but you'll find his rubs down in those, in there. And once I find those rubs, and like when I was a kid growing up, I'd find rubs like that. Well, I would hunt that whole area,
Right.
just kind of creep around, just listening. Sometimes, I'd just still hunt and just listen. And if I hear something, then I'd kind of sneak my way that way, as quiet as I can. Get up there on the hill and listen more, and oh yeah, is that an elk? No, that's not an elk, deer, whatever. But I get an elk, and so my deal is to get downwind and get into them and ambush them. So I get into the herd, and a lot of the herds out here, they're just feeding around, they're all spread out. So I'd get into these herds and watch them feed, and I'm crossing my fingers for that bull that's in there to just come walking by, so I can get my shot. And if it doesn't happen and the elk start feeding one way, then I kind of figure out which way they're going, and then I'll just do an ambush. I'll do a I'll just do a big whole half shoot, horseshoe on them, and figure out where they're going to come funneling through, and then usually I'll just cut the herd and let the whole herd come through, and there's a bull, and I kill them. And I
Nice.
kill lots of bulls not doing that. Or I've killed bulls raking their antlers, just off doing their own thing. I just spotted them and stalked in, a few hundred yards up to within 20 yards of them and shot them.
Yeah.
And so, and then I got into the calling game. So that just made things way easier for me, so because now I can sneak in, I can find these elk a lot easier
Right.
with a
Yeah.
bugle tube. So now I can find bulls and locate them, but and just
So,
getting on them.
is that what you're doing? You're locating them with the bugle, and then once you locate in an area that they're in, you're sneaking up on them, and or are you still traveling, going
Yeah.
drainage to drainage looking for sign, or
I
both?
still do that. I still do that because a lot of times those bulls are, a lot of the bigger ones that I'm looking for, they don't really, unless you catch them with their pants down, they're out feeding, doing their thing, and they haven't been bumped, and I can spot one, I'm going to sneak up and, I'm going to try and shoot them. But
Right.
early on, it's I still like to get out there and hike around and check out the area and see where they're living. So,
Yeah.
week before season, all the way up to that point, I know where they're at. And a lot of these Roosevelts too, if they're not pressured and they're in one area, they'll live in an area for a while.
Okay. Yeah,
So.
I for me, like for whatever I, and I'm by no means an expert at Roosevelt elk hunting, but from what I've experienced, it seems to me like the bulls, they pick a drainage and they kind of stay, well, not really a drainage, I want to say like a canyon almost, like a,
A little territory.
but yeah, and they kind of stay in that. I didn't really notice a big loop on the elk that but I didn't, I mean, I put in quite a few miles, believe me, but a lot of the times we'd find a bull and like say we, dropped in on him and try to put a move on him, whatever, that bull would be back in that same canyon the next day or the day after or whatever, and didn't really leave that area. Now, when I hunted in Washington, and I was telling you about that guy Mike, he talked about this 3-day loop, And he was like the first guy to kind of like brought that, you know, this is, I don't know, Jesus. 14 years ago. Yeah. You know, like sounded like a 3-day, he used to talk about three. And it was, I saw it happen. Like there was elk in the same area. And then 3 days later, those elk were in that same area again, you know.
And it all depends on the area, you know, right. Like where I'm at, there's a ton of people in there. Right? Okay. There's a lot of people that hunt this area. When they're not in their 3-day loop.
Right.
I mean, when they're not pressured, you know, yeah, they got this three, their little loop is a lot smaller. But once these elk start getting pressured and the rut starts pushing, you know, and there's a lot of bulls in the area and they're, you know, they're competing for these cows, well, their loop gets a lot bigger, you know, because, you know, you got bulls that are coming from a long ways away, you know, and they want to take those cows farther. So, and then you got other hunters too, you know, they'll push them a different direction and it'll kind of throw everything off. Like this year, you know, there was quite a few guys in there and they had, you know, they had the elk moving.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just got to up your game and you got to figure out, you know, we're, like I said, you got to kind of just back out and see where they kind of got pressured into and where they're going to kind of get back into that area, you know, that loop of the air. Cause sometimes they get pushed out completely out of it, you know, way out of their different pattern, and it could be till the end of season before they get back, you know. It all depends on your area, like the area you're in, you know it's some big area in there, and yeah, it's
pretty big,
and if they're not getting pressured much, you know, like I said, they're a loop, I think they kind of stay in a smaller general area. I guess it all depends on where you're at and how much traffic's going through there.
Gotcha.
People-wise. But like where I hunt, it's a heavily trafficked area. There's a reason. That's the only downfall. I got a lot of competition. I mean, there's a lot of people out there.
Yeah, but if you know it well and you know how to use the pressure to your advantage, sounds like
yeah. You know, and I've used other hunters, you know, where they push the elk and, you know, and I know where they're going and I got to go back and jump in the rig and, you know, hit the highway and come in the unit from a different side and try to get back on them, you know,
right. Especially
if it's a big giant bull that I'm hunting.
Gotcha. So let's talk about, what are you looking for specifically? Like say you go to a new unit that you've never been to and, you know, what are some characteristics? What are some things that you could say, hey, well, I know if I find this and I find this and I find this in vicinity of each other or whatever, I'm going to find elk in there, or I'm definitely going to find elk sign, which is going to lead me to elk. What are some of the things that you're looking for specifically?
Rubs.
Yeah.
Them rubs are big rubs, and I'm not talking about, you know, those little trees that are, you know, little pecker poles where they treat like, you know, toothpicks. I'm talking about those big giant alder trees that they can't bend, and, you know, you got your bow and you can't even reach the top, you know, deal. Those are the rubs I'm looking for.
Got it.
And once I find those, and I will kind of stick to that area. But in there, you know, I know some areas that have, you know, a few bulls that kind of hang out together that'll leave rubs like that. So they're out there, you know, like so if I go to a new area and new unit, I'll look for rubs and I'll look for up, you know, I'm not, like I said,
are there like landscape features or anything like that, that you look for to go find?
Mostly feed. Yeah.
Okay. And like what specifically about feed? Like, okay.
Just a lot of the.
I'm stupid. I don't know what elk eat.
Out here, they like eating a lot of the broadleaves. You know, they kind of eat they eat a lot of vine maple. You find big vine maple patches, you'll find elk. You know that will, you'll see trails through there where they feed through it. You know, and you know, all the little varieties of just little maples that, you know, they eat those along with like like huckleberry, bushes. I've seen them mount on the ends of that, and just the broadleaf spectrum of like skunk cabbages, and I've seen them eating on that, and you see how green it is out here.
I was gonna say everything looks like feet to me.
It's like it's all there, So, well, I know the area you're in. It's some big country, and there's a lot of feet in there.
Right.
But it's different over where I'm at. Like I said, you just know where. I know where the good feed is, and a lot of elk will visit that, that area. And that's kind of the areas that I kind of focus on and on these elk, and the area that I hunt, because like I said, it's a lot of it, I'm just hunting these little patches of state land, and BLM and the state land and BLM is where the feed is in the area that I hunt. There's feed throughout the timberlands, there is some feed out there, but the majority of the good stuff is where, is in those older growth, forest patches.
Gotcha.
Which is state land, they manage their land, their trees different. You find those areas where they kind of do selective thinning and kind of opens up a lot of feed in there. And those are kind of areas that I look for and if I find those areas, like in a new area, me and Sarah found a new area last year, just kind of dinking around and, looking for those thinned out areas and areas that kind of border timberlands and, like they have a, warehouse, you got to buy a permit.
Oh, yeah.
And I get the walk-in permit because, in some of the areas that I hunt, there's a lot of warehouser and those elk are on that same pattern, just because there's no, clear cuts. I mean, a lot of those are just overgrown reprod patches, you can't even see through them. You can't really even hunt in them anyways, but if the elk are in there, I'm going to be in there, and so I'm not, I try to do it the legit way. I don't want to get no ticket,
Right. Right.
$75 is $75 to get trespass fee if you're following elk. So, yeah, but sure, most of the time, those elk will end right back up in state land because that's where the feed is, unless they're really pressured. And if they're really pressured, they'll hunker down in that, in a lot of that timber company, and you won't see them. They'll stay in that thick reprod where, good luck. You shoot one, it's going to be a foot away from you.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Well, awesome, man. Thanks for taking the time and sharing your knowledge with us. There's definitely some takeaway there. Like, you do things differently than a lot of guys are doing. So, but it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work and a lot of experience too. Like, you put a lot of time in over the years, and that's kind of all, added up to where you're at now.
Yeah, it's in my whole life and here in the coast, it's just kind of, it's probably why I'm successful. It's because I just grew up here, it's and that's what I live for. I grew up just breathing elk, and I do a lot of blacktail hunting too, as well. And that's another thing, when I'm out elk hunting, I see some big bucks out there. Well, that's how I used to hunt them. I'd see a nice buck and I'd remember where he was and I'd be right back in there, and during rifle season.
Right.
Looking for that buck.
Nice. Awesome, man. Well, maybe I'm not going to make it out this year, but as I have clients here in Arizona, so I'm going to kind of forego going elk hunting myself this year, I guess. I got to take care of the guys that I got coming in. So, maybe next year I plan to hit Oregon again and maybe we'll hook up and hunt a day or so.
I'll come in and join in camp and we can want to go out and like I said, we can do it.
Sounds good, man.
I'll always be open, usually the whole month of September. That's another deal too, is that all my time, from my job, I got 7 weeks of paid time off. So, a month of that goes to September. So
there you go.
And that's, and I dedicate every day. It's daylight to dark every day. I'm in those woods and I don't come out until, like I said, every day I usually see elk, and when Sarah's not with me and I'm camped out there, and if I'm tagged out, I'm still out in the field, and I'm just seeing how close I can get to these animals. And what I see, sometimes my mouth stays shut if I see some giant thing.
Yeah. Nice. Nice. Well, awesome, brother. Thank you very again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, it was good talking to you. Like I said, when you plan on coming out here, just keep in touch. And even if you want to do a blacktail hunt,
Yeah,
I'm doing.
blacktail's my nemesis, man. So I've been hunting in California for blacktail for the last, I actually didn't go last year, and I'm not going this year, mainly because of the COVID thing for this year, why I'm not going. But yeah, I need to get a blacktail. It's kind of getting ridiculous now. I pretty much like shot almost everything in the United States besides a blacktail and a Roosevelt. So,
Yeah,
any of the achievable stuff. But
if you do a blacktail hunt in Oregon, I usually just don't mess around until the last week
yeah.
that season. And this year, it's going to carry on a week later, so it's going to be really good right here this
Yeah.
year.
Okay. That's what I heard. I had to come during the rut. See, I went during the rut in Washington, and I was tree stand hunting them. And I had an opportunity, and again, it was one of those situations like he was giving me a head-on shot, and I should have just took it. I don't know how many times I've killed. I don't know. I can't even tell you how many times I've killed deer and other animals with that shot. But for some reason, I just thought he was going to turn because he wasn't. But when he turned, he just turned and he left. Like, so it went from front to backside, and I didn't have a shot. I was like, what? Like, I was, I don't know. It was
You
just
just
one of
go with
those
your
things.
intuition, If you don't feel
He
that,
was,
don't take it.
that was the buck that made me decide, like, from that point on, and I never really hesitated when I thought I knew, when I knew I could make a shot, I never hesitated. After that point, that was the buck that changed the way I should hunt. Like, yeah, I mean, it was like 14 years ago or 13 years ago. Yeah, something like that. So anyway, all right, man. Well, I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Thanks again. And hopefully, do you put in for Arizona at all?
I can tell you the truth. Like I said, 2 years
Never.
ago was my first out of state Montana hunt. So me and the woman, I just got her into hunting. So she's like
Yeah.
turning into this bow fanatic right now and hunting
Yeah,
fanatic.
she seemed pretty hardcore about it when we were talking about
I
it.
just I like turn to, she was a fisher woman, and
Yeah.
her dad and her sister are hunters. I mean, they're hunters, and back in Idaho, and she was a fisher daughter, fisherwoman. And
Yeah.
and I think it's 2016, she just went, just for a tag along with me out here, and I called in a big 6 point in one of those thick reed prod patches I was telling you about, and he came so close that I smack his nose,
Oh
and
shit.
she was right behind me on his shoulder, and it was funny because this bull came in so fast. I called him, and I was putting an arrow in. I didn't even have an arrow in, and I just
Oh
kind of
shit.
trying to locate to see where he was, and I didn't realize I was already that close to him. And by the time I had put my arrow in my nock and had my release on, I look up and he's right there. He's facing me, and
Jesus.
face to face. And so she's like looking at me like, "Oh my God, what? This is tripping out." And of course, the bull spooked a little bit and just took a 10-foot jump. And as he jumped 10 foot, I pulled back, and he was standing there broadside, so 10 feet away. Yeah, I was, he was
Nice.
dead.
But you had her hooked.
And after
Yeah.
that, it was like, she went and out and all the sick, all the camo,
Yep.
and got all the archery, because you spent a couple grand, just dropped it right there, and practiced every day. And and that's my excitement right there.
Yeah.
Watching her, kind of just brings about that excitement back out in me. So
Awesome.
right
Sweet.
on.
All right, brother.
Hey,
Take
I'll
it
talk to
easy.
you. All right.
Bye.
Bye.